Sikkim Sports presents the Sikkim Sportscast, a look at all things Baylor from recruiting to football, basketball, as well as news concerning the Big 12. Your hosts are publisher Kevin Lundquist and managing editor Jake Shaw. Our MC is Stephen Cook. Now it's time to talk Baylor, and here's Stephen Cook.
Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your publisher, Kevin Lundquist.
How are you, Stephen? Good to see you. Good to talk with you again, and always glad to have Jake with us, too.
And your managing editor, Jake Shaw.
Yes, Kevin. Thank you for the introduction. It's great to be back, guys. Ready for some live action on Saturday.
Okay, and since we've all recovered from mowing the lawns during the bye week, we are going to move into Baylor. This has also been a big week for on the recruiting front, and we'll have updates on Brecken Hager, Tony Nicholson, and Kobe Eubanks later in the podcast in our second segment. But first, let's talk about what the bye week meant for Baylor. Jake.
Yeah, while you tease recruiting and all that, I also want to tease that we have an interview with Paul Clark. He's a 12-year veteran covering Iowa State for the Rivals.com site for Iowa State, so that's something else to look forward to. So, now your question, what does the bye week mean for Baylor? It meant one more week to get guys healthy. Obviously, Bryce Petty came back against Buffalo, but you got to wonder if he was still dealing with a little bit of pain. 2 weeks from now, or 2 weeks from that game, you got to think the pain is maybe all the way gone now and that he's back to normal. More importantly, though, we're going to see the return of three players who've one of them, Corey Coleman, hasn't played at all. The other two, Antoine Goodley and Devin Chafin, are supposed to play. They both appeared in the opener and haven't done anything since because of injuries. So, you know, the bye week came at the most opportune time possible. You play your three non-conference games, you get the powder puffs off your schedule, and you get a chance to kind of regroup and maybe look at back at film and see what you're doing right and wrong and try to correct what's wrong. So I think it's just a perfect time for a bye week for Baylor. Kevin, I know you probably agree with that.
Yeah, I think the one thing is, too, is the fact that if you were to draw up a scenario where you were going to tell the Baylor coaching staff that you were going to start the year with several key members of the squad missing on the offensive side of the ball, and you weren't going to have them for the non-conference season, but yet they would be back in time for when your conference season starts. And you'd go 3-0 and still win all three games pretty convincingly. I think they would take that, even though they would prefer to have everybody healthy. But, you know, football is what it is. It's an attrition game, and you just got to keep everybody on the field who can help you and just learn to deal with those who are out. I think what's important here is the fact that, you know, last week, you know, a lot of the guys got to the trainer's room, got a lot of work in just for rehabbing or whatever, just a heel up. They had a couple of days of workouts. Coaches went on the recruiting trail on Friday and Saturday to look at some prospects or look at their committed players in action again. And I think the important thing to keep in mind is here is that they got back to work this past Monday, pretty focused, driven, realizing what's in front of them. Because this is a pretty grueling four-game stretch coming up with them, with Iowa State, Texas, TCU, West Virginia, and then Oklahoma State. So that's going to be a very much of a challenging part for them. Or Kansas, I'm sorry, excuse me.
Well, Kansas, actually, between that West Virginia and Kansas game, there's another bye week.
Right.
You get the bye week, then Kansas, then the game everyone's been pointing to at Oklahoma, and then another bye week, the last one. Kevin, I think you make an excellent point, though, your first point about the guys who were injured. If you were to have a top five list of guys that you could, you know, that wouldn't hurt the team, not only being out, but also wouldn't hurt the development of certain players by being out. I mean, if you had a top five, Antoine Goodley would be in it. Levi Norwood would be in it. Petty, Clay Fuller, I don't know who else, you know, maybe Bryce Hager. But my point is, I mean, if you had, say, Ryan Reed and Xavier Howard injured and Avion Edwards injured, you know, or offensively maybe like a Kyle Fuller injured, your starting center, those are all first-year starters. They really needed the non-conference to get experience. Antoine Goodley didn't need any extra time to get better. I don't think Corey Coleman needed it either. So really, Baylor has been extremely fortunate, not only in the few number of injuries they've had, but also to who the injuries have been. Baylor was just fine without those guys. Meanwhile, the guys that needed experience in these first three games, they've gotten it. So I think Baylor's been fortunate, especially when you look at Iowa State. They've had five players lost for the season with injury. I mean, talk about end of the world scenario. I mean, that's five starters that they've lost to injury. So Baylor's been very fortunate, and this bye week has only helped Baylor get even more healthy.
Now, do you think that, one of the things I noticed during the Buffalo game was that Petty played longer than he normally would have, but when you look at it, he only got like three-quarters play for the whole first three games. You know, you really can't even count that first time, you know, when he got hurt on that first hit against SMU. So, you know, you see guys coming in and you're seeing guys get, and one of the things you hear Bryle say over and over and over is that we don't like term backups. He said, we've got 18 or 19 guys that we consider starter quality. And so, you know, you had the guys in there that they got starting reps, and, you know, I'm not sure that you get just a whole lot better performance. I don't care who's on the field than Seth Russell with like 480 yards and Katie Cannon with over 200 yards in the first half. You just didn't see a whole lot of drop-off against that level of competition. Anyway, but that being said, do you think there might be some rust heading into Iowa State after the bye game? Kevin?
Probably for a little bit, but at the same time, I wouldn't fret about it too much. I mean, the fact that the one thing about it is just making sure that everyone's in communication with each other, that everyone has the calls right and, you know, snap counts right, that sort of thing. You're never going to know until you get out there. But I don't think this is going to be too much of an issue for this squad, only because the fact that you've got a veteran quarterback in Bryce Petty, and he's got some veterans in the offensive line and at the wide receiver core, provided how you want to use Goodley in that game, as well as Corey Coleman, those guys, to kind of bridge the gap. My personal opinion is I think that you will see a couple of those guys in the starting lineup, if not all of them, but at least a couple of those guys in the starting lineup along with KD, because I think they don't want to throw all the kids out there in their first Big 12 road game. That would be a little bit daring. But I think if they did it this way and they kind of eased in, maybe they start KD along with Goodley and Coleman and those guys, I think it probably would help the transition. I think a game like this where I think the one guy that they would miss, though, in a game like this on the road would be Levi Norwood, just because, you know, he brings so many different intangibles, especially in the return game. But I think they'll handle it fine, and I think they'll be okay to handle the Cyclones, even though that won't be easy.
Yeah, I kind of agree, Kevin. I think you know, you watch that first game, Antoine Goodley didn't play much because of the injury, but when he was in there, he and Bryce Petty seemed to be on different pages. So, you know, I'm curious if that was just some pregame jitters or just nervousness first game of the season. And now that they haven't played with each other since fall camp, really, maybe that shows up a little if they're making different reads on routes. But after three games, I don't think there's really going to be much rust unless it's just by the guys coming back from injury who haven't really had a chance to play at all, like a Corey Coleman. But I don't see it being much of an issue either.
Okay, I'm going to swerve a little off topic on here. But you talked about Goodley and Petty kind of being on different pages. A lot of people have talked about Goodley being the replacement for Tevin Reese, and I've never really seen it that way. I think KD Cannon's going to be the replacement for Tevin Reese because I think Cannon's going to be the guy that stretches the field. Goodley, because he's really, if you look at him, he looks like a running back. And Goodley leads, I think, the NCAA in yards after catch, or did last year. And so where I think Goodley and Petty really hook up best is on short passes where Goodley can extend the plays because he can break tackles by safeties and corners. So, you know, I just kind of see that, and I don't, my personal opinion is that I don't see Goodley as the deep threat. I see him as the short to intermediate threat that takes it long after the catch.
Yeah, I agree, Stephen, and it's good to have the luxury of having a deep threat and a guy like that. Baylor, their whole philosophy is let's get our fastest guys or our best playmakers in space, and often that is just a lateral throw to the sideline, and you're right, Goodley is such a powerful guy that you know, maybe that part of the game will be utilized more with him back. You know, they've tried to do it with Jay Lee, and Jay Lee's been playing great, but he doesn't break tackles like Antoine Goodley does. He's just not nearly as strong or as physical. So, yeah, I think having him back brings just another dimension to this already, you know, potent offense. It's that's why I said at the top, I think Baylor, we're going to see the best offensive performance from the team at Iowa State on Saturday, because I think they're much more complete now with some guys back, which brings us to our next item on the outline is, you know, how much will playing on the road, playing at a tough place like Ames, Iowa, you know, how much will that matter on Saturday? I'm sure we all have differing views on this, as we do on almost every topic. Kevin, what do you think?
Well, it's going to be a difficult place to play. Ames, Iowa is always a difficult place to play. Baylor won there under Art Briles. And what they've only won there once, I think, in their Big 12 lifetime, if memory serves. Well, I think that was 2005. And, you know, look, I've maintained this philosophy. It doesn't matter if you're on the road in Norman or in Lawrence, Kansas, that winning on the road in the conference is always a good win, just because it's only you and your 85 kids that are with you, your coaching staff, and maybe you got some fans in the stands with you who are completely outnumbered 900-1 ratio-wise, and you've just got to find a way. Now, the fact that this game is going to be played at prime time at night, 7 o'clock, Iowa State fans will have been tailgating all day long, and we know where that means. And there's going to be some great energy by Iowa State to start. And look, they picked off Oklahoma State 2 years ago, which essentially cost the Cowboys a chance to play for the national title. They darn sure nearly picked off Kansas State earlier this year, about 3 weeks ago. So it's proven it's a very difficult place to play, and you better be prepared to get their best shot early, because if Baylor can get through, if Baylor jumps on them really fast, this game could be over pretty quickly. But I have a feeling that Iowa State's going to come out very, very aggressive early. They're going to hit Baylor everything that they've got. They may downplay the fact that they don't really pay attention to 71-7 in 2013 on Baylor's homecoming last year. Yeah, they know it's there, but everyone knows it's there. And there are too many guys that are holdovers from that roster that probably feel like we owe these guys something. It won't be good enough to be Baylor, in my judgment, but they're going to go after them and give them everything they got.
Well, first, I'm going to say that, yeah, I agree with you. It's a difficult place to play because it is a road game. You're right. Even in Lawrence, Kansas, Baylor in 2011 nearly lost the game to a really terrible Kansas team. Having said that, I think the mystique of playing at Ames is overblown sometimes. Yeah, you said Baylor's won there once. Well, I mean, how many good teams has Baylor brought to Ames?
One. True.
The only team that was good that they brought to Ames was in 2012. Baylor lost that, I think, 35-21. You need some context there. First of all, that was the fourth loss of a four-game losing streak. Right. Baylor was, you know, plummeting at that point. Two, they just had multiple turnovers and a horrifically bad defense at that time. Now things change. And then Briles' other team was in 2009, I believe. I can't remember which year it was. It was whatever year RG3. I think it was 2009.
9 and 11 the years there. Nine, but it was the year that Griffin was out, and Nick was backing up for him.
Exactly. So, you know, the other time that Briles went there, he was playing with a Nick Florence who was not supposed to be playing. RG3 had been lost. The season was kind of almost a lost cause at that point. So it's not like Bryles has brought really a team like this to Iowa. Secondly, I think in the last 2 years, Iowa State has only won one home game against Big 12 teams. So while it's a tough place to play, it's not like they just have this great record of knocking off teams.
No, that's going to be easy to win there.
No, it's not. It's not. I'm not going to downplay that. I'm just saying, let's not make it out like this is like going to Norman. It's a tougher place to play. It's just they're not playing a very good team. Baylor is really going to have to shoot itself in the foot multiple times to lose this game because they're such a different in talent. Then my last point about this was I teased that we're going to talk to Paul Clark, who covers Iowa State and has for 12 years. I asked him, I said, you know, where would you rate Iowa State's home field advantage among other Big 12 teams? And he said middle of the pack. And, you know, for a guy who covers them and is actually personally a fan of Iowa State too, I thought that was pretty telling. I think we can tend to just exaggerate how difficult it is just because Baylor has only won one time there. But, you know, bottom line, it's the road. So, yes, it's going to be more difficult because you're not sleeping in your own beds at night. But it's not like West Virginia, which we'll see soon. I think it's a bit exaggerated how tough Iowa State can be.
Okay, my take on it is that I do think, Jake, you already covered part of what I was thinking, is that, you know, this is by far the best team that Bryles has taken into Ames, Iowa.
Yeah.
It's a tough place to play. But, you know, when they said, like, middle of the pack, you know, when I was up there at Oklahoma State at Pickens Stadium, that is a tough place to play.
Okay? Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's any way. I haven't been to Ames. I don't think there's any way it's a tougher place to play than Pickens Stadium. And a lot of that has to do with who's on the other side of the field too.
Exactly. That was my point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that, you know, Jack Trice probably rivals Bryant Denny Stadium in Tuscaloosa. That's where I was going with it. So.
Okay. Good. Well, so
what do we expect? You know, when Baylor plays ISU, I'll go ahead and throw this out. I expect ISU to come out sky high. Yeah, they put that 70-6 beat down, worst defeat lost in program history behind them. Yeah, you bet. Sure, they have. That loss gave them a three-week hangover. They played poorly. They never got their confidence back for the rest of the season. So they're going to come out sky high. I expect them to play pretty well early, particularly juiced up by the crowd. But I think that the other thing is it's something that I look at when I look in, and part of it's about matchups, but part of it's about raw talent. And I don't see any area where Iowa State has a talent advantage over Baylor, and I think the talent advantage for Baylor is pretty strong in most positions, even in their defensive line, which is strong for them. I think Baylor's definitely stronger. So I think Baylor rolls, and I think if Baylor can get up two or three scores, then that forces Iowa State out of their slow it down game, and then it could get ugly.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything you said. Baylor, to me, needs to call plays like they did against Iowa State last year. I went back and watched the film of that this week, and if Iowa State had 8 men in the box, Baylor was throwing downfield or throwing quickly to the outside receivers. If Iowa State was, you know, playing a deep zone, Baylor ran the ball. You know, it sounds simple, but Baylor hasn't done that in the first three games of the year. Baylor's been strongly pushing the running game, even when teams are trying to take away the run. So it's been really curious to watch Baylor because I think I really think that they've been just trying to work out the running game rather than adjusting their play calls to what the defense is giving. So, yeah, if Baylor calls plays similarly to how they did against Iowa State last year, there's just no way Iowa State can hang with Baylor. Like you said, Stephen, the talent gap is huge. There's only one guy on Iowa State I look at who would start for Baylor, and that's their tight end, E.J. Bibbs. I think he's a great tight end. Mm-hmm. But there's really not another player that I look on there to, you know, they're starting 11 on each side of the ball where I think Baylor would be better if they swapped guys. There's just a big difference.
Well, and plus the fact, too, I mean, Iowa State has lost several important players to season-ending injuries, including one of their top wide receivers, Quentin Bundridge. He's out with an ACL tear, and I think he got that. I think he hurt that in their second game against Kansas State. I think there were some high hopes for him, but across the board, with the exception of maybe the kicker situation. Oh,
there you go. That's another starter I take.
That's probably about where Iowa State may have the edge, but that's about it. I could see Iowa State scoring first just because of the energy and so forth, but when this game starts to settle in late first quarter, middle of the second quarter, something like that, when the real game begins, then this becomes our good against your good, and our good is just so much better. Yeah. And I think you could see Baylor jumping out as quickly as 21-7 or 21-3 early. And I thought that Paul Clark on your Q&A, Jake, made a great point. If they're getting inside the red zone and they aren't getting touchdowns and they have to settle for field goals, that's a recipe for a loss. Mm-hmm. They have got to get – every time they get inside the Baylor 20, they've got to score. And there is enormous pressure on the Iowa State offense to match what Baylor does. And I just don't see – and Sam Richardson's a nice little quarterback. He helped them have a pretty good year a couple of years ago when they got to the Liberty Bowl. But really – this is a team that just does not have enough personnel to match up with Baylor. Again, this is like one of those things where Baylor is going to have to absolutely do its absolute best to help them with turnovers, major mistakes, things like that, in order for Iowa State to pull this off.
That's right. I mean, Baylor's going to, I think, and I don't want to discount Iowa State's chances because I agree. I think they'll come out blazing, and I think this could be a game deep into the third quarter, maybe even the fourth. But that depends to me, I think, on Baylor just, again, shooting himself in the foot. You don't have Levi Norwood returning punts, so that's a little questionable area. So, yeah, turnovers, bad penalties. And, again, if the play calling is suspect, which is – it's hard to be critical of an offense averaging 60 points a game, but I think they could have done better in these first three games. And I'm sure the staff thinks that too. If they're fully content with what they've done in the first three games, then there's a motivation problem because you know you can always get better. To me again, it just comes down. Yeah, I guess you know we keep talking about. Sorry, we keep talking about the Baylor offense, but what's this Baylor defense going to do? I'm curious to see how much pressure they're going to get on Iowa State's quarterback. It wasn't quite the same against Buffalo as it was the first two games. And, you know, is Buffalo better? Was it a road game that maybe had the defense playing maybe not quite as well? You know, it's curious. So, you know, I want to see what this Baylor defense, especially the defensive line, does on the road.
Okay, I'm going to throw in that when, Jake, I know you've been a little concerned about the play calling in the first three games, but I really think that's part of, and, you know, we've had debate ad nauseum on Baylor's non-conference schedule, but I've always felt like I've understood what Bryce was trying to do, and I think that he views these non-conference games as kind of scrimmages, and I don't think they really cared what the Buffalo defense did or what the SMU defense did or what Northwestern State's defense did. I think they came out and said, hey, we want to work on the running game, so they stick eight guys in the box. Okay, that's a good challenge for us to work on the running game. And so I don't think they really cared in that. I absolutely do not believe that they're going to be trying to run for their bread and butter against an eight-man box during a conference game. I think that now that stuff just goes out the window. So that's, you know, just kind of where I am on that.
I agree with that, Stephen. The only thing that prevents me from just really saying you're right or that I'm right about that is that Baylor does not have a history of doing that. when has Art Briles ever shown that he's going to just work on one area of the game? I mean, usually he just goes for the throat in the first two quarters. And maybe it's the, you know, injuries at receiver, or again, maybe he's just trying to work on the running game. I just haven't seen that quite that amount of aggression with the Baylor offense that I've seen, especially in non-conference last year. You know, Baylor certainly wasn't trying to work on the game, running game against Wofford and Buffalo and Louisiana Monroe. So I guess that's what gives me pause, is that, you know, for the first time I'm seeing almost just stubbornness by this team rather than just attacking what's available. So that I agree that I do think they are working on the running game, but I've never seen them do that before, and that's what's curious.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. Kevin, we got some bad news out of the recruiting for football. Brecken Hager, can you fill us in?
Yeah, the linebacker out of Austin Westlake, who had committed to Baylor back in May, actually the night of his spring football game, got an offer from Texas last week, or I should say 2 weeks ago, and made the move and decided that he would change his commitment from Baylor to Texas. And of course, the last name Hager has a lot of resonates a lot with Baylor and Texas fans. Of course, Britt Hager, his dad, played for UT back in the early 80s, and of course, his brother Bryce is now at Baylor, having a very solid career. And really, I think the mood of people when the Texas offer came in was like, well, if he goes, it wouldn't be a big shocker. And so I don't think a lot of people were going to be too upset about this. I always looked at his commitment to Baylor as a little bit of a oddity from the standpoint of, were they trying to capture lightning in a bottle like they did with Bryce? Which they did, of course. And they wanted to kind of show that they could go in right under UT's nose again, because UT was probably too, quote unquote, too good for something like that. But obviously, I'm sure there had to be, guys, some internal pressure from the Texas folks, maybe from Britt himself, who knows, saying, look, you guys didn't recruit my first son, Bryce, and he's having an all Big 12 career at Baylor, and you're not doing it again to Brecken, and he's having a great season, and he's already committed to your Big 12 rival again. Again, there's no way to prove that, and I'm not even saying that it happened. All I'm saying is that there has to be something that clicked, because, you know, when it comes to legacies, unless the kid really doesn't want to go to where his dad went to school, he's going to want to go to where his dad went to school. And I think that's kind of what happened here. And that's okay. I mean, that's recruiting. That's the way it works. And recruiting is weird, and that's just why kids will all of a sudden commit to it. What I do find weird, though, guys, is that this is the third of the four commitments that Baylor has had. Three of them have flipped from Baylor to Texas. You're talking about Ronnie Major, the Huntsville offensive lineman, who decommitted back in January. Then you have Lewis Burton, Lewis Smith from Burton, who flipped from Baylor to Texas back in June. Now you have this.
Lewis Brown.
Lewis Brown, excuse me. I don't know. I'll soon we forget. But Lewis Brown, who switched from Baylor to Texas back in June. And so, I don't know. I made the assertion that maybe what Baylor is doing is evaluating so well that other schools have got their respect, including Texas. And maybe we got the makings of a pretty good rivalry here between Texas and Baylor, especially in lieu of the fact that Baylor's won three out of the last four and are going to be favorites to win October 4th at Austin.
Yeah, I got varying thoughts on this. I mean, one, if Bryce Hager would have been offered by Texas, he never would have gone to Baylor. Right. That was his, you know, basically his dream school. He wanted to go to Texas. They didn't give him that chance. So obviously, it's not too surprising that perhaps Brecken, that's where he always wanted to play too. Secondly, I think if Mack Brown is still the head coach of Texas and he offers Brecken, I can't say for sure, but I think he probably stays with Baylor. I think perhaps the change at the top, having Charlie Strong come in. He wasn't the one who, you know, insulted the Hager family by not offering Bryce. That's not on his hands. It was the previous regime. So I think the fact that, that Texas does have a new coach, you know, made it even easier for Brecken to decommit, because this wasn't the same coach that, you know, quote unquote, wronged his brother. And third, I don't know what he is as a prospect. I think you're right, Kevin. Maybe they were trying to catch lightning in a bottle twice. I do know that I saw Bryce Hager play once in high school in 2009. And after watching him play, I wondered if he was the best player I'd seen all season. And I saw about 60 different high school football teams play that year. So a large sample size there. He was pretty special in high school. I haven't seen Brecken play yet. I don't know if he's that caliber. I will say I'll be very stunned if he's as good as Bryce, because Bryce is a very special player. And, you know, it's going to be hard for him to match what his brother has done. And you know, maybe it's almost a better thing that he doesn't come to Baylor and perhaps fail to meet those expectations. And you kind of wonder, you know, what happens with the little brother. So, again, not a surprise he did it. I as y'all know, I've said on the site, my grandparents went to Baylor, my parents went to Baylor. I grew up a huge Baylor fan. If I was a good athlete, which I'm not, and, you know, Baylor would have been my dream school too, even if I had an older brother go to another school, perhaps even a rival. And I feel like that's kind of what the position Brecken's in right now.
Yeah, I think there probably was something to it, the fact that, you know, he wants to go play before his dad went to play. Maybe he thought about it and said, you know, do I really want to walk in my older brother's shadows when I'll always get the constant conspiracies? Well, your brother Bryce was always this and this and this, and how come you can't? And he avoids it altogether at Texas because he's so far removed from what Britt did at UT that it's really going to be inconsequential. They're just going to – the stories about him playing in Austin now will be – he's the son of the former Texas great Britt Hager, who had a storied career, and there are high hopes for him, and you just kind of leave it at that.
Yeah.
And then I wish him well. I hope it's the best thing for him. And, you know, the only thing I look at with kids when they commit or when they flip is that just make sure that you have all of the information that you need to have before you either make this decision or you change. But, yeah, because it's the hardest decision of any – it's the first tough decision of any young person's life. And there's so many things that go in. It's going to impact the way you live the rest of your life where you go to school. And that doesn't matter if you're going to be playing in college athletics or not. It's just going to shape the way the rest of your life goes. So I think for his standpoint, I hope it works out for him. I hope he has a great career, and I'm sure Baylor – and, you know, the great thing about it was that the reaction from the people on our site was that they didn't hold a lot of ill will toward him. They actually wished him the best and moved on.
Well, let's move on ourselves. And there was some good news on the football recruiting front. Another switch of a pledge, if you will. Tony Nicholson, he's the South Grand Prairie athlete. He originally committed to Arizona State. I think that was in April. Decommitted, and then about, 2 to 3 weeks later, he's now a Baylor commitment. So Baylor, while they're losing one to Texas, they stole one from the Pac-12. Kevin, I kind of saw it coming. I know you did too. You talked to him. I guess, you know, tell me kind of how it went down.
Well, it sounded like that, you know, Jeff Levy had been working on him for the last pretty much ever since, you know, they started to get to know him. And even though he committed to Arizona State back in April, it was right around Easter, I think it was, when Tony did that, but something like that. But anyway, I think Baylor just maintained contact with Tony, and Tony allowed the dialogue to continue. I mean, he had the opportunity to shut it down, and he didn't do it. And I know that when he was out to Tempe and going through Arizona State's camp, of course, which is run by former Texas high school coaches and Todd Graham, who was obviously there, you know, you look at the fact that that Tony was, you know, was looking at, had a good relationship, really loved the fact that he was out there, and maybe just the newness of it wore off. And maybe that's what, you know, maybe he just kind of realized that's too far away. And I think that that's important for him to really understand that the proximity of it. And then it culminated in him and his mother going down on Sunday to visit with the coaching staff. And then around, I guess it was around 5:30 when he announced on Twitter that he was giving his commitment to Baylor. And, of course, Art Briles sent off his Dream Big, Dream Baylor tweet with a 469 area code on it. It's a great – I've always liked Tony. I talked to him at the DeSoto Rivals Camp series in March. I thought he's a great guy. He's pretty small. You know, he's not gonna. He comes up to my height, and I'm about 5'10", and he's obviously really, really quick. He's going to be an asset in the return game. I think Baylor will look at him in the secondary. He can change. You know, his hips are really, really good. Because when I saw him in the drills in DeSoto, that was one thing that really stood out to me. So he's going to be fun, and he's just another one of those types of athletes that Art Briles and his staff love to bring in, who can be so versatile.
Yeah, you know, I haven't talked to him since he picked Baylor. I talked to him after he decommitted from Arizona State, and I talked to him a lot before he picked Arizona State. And I will say that when he picked Arizona State, I was pretty shocked because I really felt like it was a matter of time before he committed to Baylor. I kind of wonder, and again, this is just based on my conversations with him. You know, I wonder if he wanted a big splash, you know, maybe for himself, for his peers, his family. You know, going out of state to a big conference program, you know, that's a pretty neat thing. And I think deep down in his heart, he probably wanted to stay closer home. I know his family definitely wanted him to play closer to home. So I kind of think he went for that big splash and then just kind of started to realize, well, if I commit to Arizona State, that means I'm in Arizona for the next 5 years of my life, when I could be an hour and a half away from my family. And so I think that's kind of the thought process that he went through. And like you said, Baylor never gave up on him. And when a recruit commits somewhere and then continues to talk to other programs, look, it's basically a soft verbal at that point. And that goes for guys who are committed to Baylor, too. Mm-hmm. If you're a recruit and you're committed somewhere and you're taking phone calls and you're calling back coaches and you're answering texts from coaches, you're no more than a soft commit because you're allowing yourself to be recruited by other schools. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's how he treated it. And, you know, Baylor, you win some and you lose some, and Baylor got a second chance with this guy and made it happen.
You know, you guys keep, Kevin, you've got that quote that I think is really accurate. We said recruiting is weird. The thing that I keep coming back to is recruiting is also kind of like dating in a small town high school. You know, it's the fact that somebody's committed doesn't mean that other guys quit trying to pick them up. You know, and so that's something that I really, sorry?
Is that how it goes in Crawford?
Well, yeah, you know, it's like one couple breaks up and everybody in the school breaks up and then you all start over with new partners. But anyway, so with this, we've got Nicholson in now, Hager's gone. What does that leave us in terms of what Baylor's looking for the rest of their 2015 class?
Well, I will say they're not really looking at maybe certain positions. You know, perhaps they are. I kind of look at it as best player available. They don't really have any big needs. I think everything, you know, maybe linebacker now that Hager's gone. Maybe you want one more linebacker. Other than that, there's not really a certain position that stands out. So I think there's a list of 5 to 10 guys that Baylor's actively recruiting still. Guys like Darian Daniels, the defensive tackle from Bishop Dunn. Now that you got DeMarcus Lodge from Cedar Hill, who decommitted from Texas A&M last week, he's the you know, top 20 receiver out of Cedar Hill. You got Malik Jefferson, a linebacker who's the number one linebacker in the state, a top 20 national guy. So with these last few spots, Baylor is aiming very high. And if you win one of them, maybe two, then this class is just really outstanding, even for being such a small class.
Yeah, they're at 12 right now, and I do think that they probably need to get another linebacker. Maybe, you know, we'll have a story in Sikkim Sports on Thursday regarding maybe some options here, just to kind of give an idea as to who's out there, what may be available, that sort of thing. You know, they could, you know, they might take Hager's spot and give it to a JUCO kid. They've done that before. They've had a history of bringing linebackers in from the JUCO ranks and have a pretty good track record with that, so that could happen. I do think they really want to get a second running back with this group to go with Jamichael Hasty. I believe those are the two. If we are talking positions specific, those would be the two that I think that they would really want to focus on. And then you kind of go with, all right, if we can get Malik Jefferson, great. If we can get Khalil Houghton, great. If we can get DeMarcus Lodge, great. You know, guys like that. If they can find a way to get them, and then you just kind of circle down to this. And, you know, I know we've talked about 16, but I still think that I'd love to say a 16 is an ironclad number. But Jake and Steven, as you know, with this staff and the way this roster kind of matriculates up and down, it could be 16, it could be 15, it could be 18 by the time we hit signing day in February. It just kind of depends on what happens, availability, things like that. And if you quote unquote kind of, you know, they're not going to get to 25, that we know. So yeah. If they were to sign, even if they sign, let's just say this, if they were to get to 18 guys and they're actually over 85 with these signings by the count, you know they're going to find a way to wiggle that to make sure they can get all those guys in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, if Lodge and Soso Jumabo and Darian Daniels and Malik Jefferson, if they all want to commit, Baylor's not going to turn them down because they're over their targeted number. Baylor's going to make room for guys like that, and I think that's kind of what you have now. They have 12 strong in this class, and whatever happens, happens. And I think Baylor would be pretty thrilled if all those guys I just mentioned, you know, wanted to commit. Well,
okay,
we're talking. Go ahead, Stephen.
Well, just that the next thing we were going to talk about, apparently Kobe Eubanks did not make his grades, which is about as surprising as if Johnny Manziel does something embarrassing. But what does this do for Baylor in terms of basketball?
Well, to reset Kobe Eubanks, we've switched to basketball. He was a signee for 2014 for Scott Drew and the basketball program, shooting guard out of New York State. This is one where I don't lose any sleep over. And one that just barely even registers. Not to say anything about him, but Baylor is completely loaded at guard. Eubanks was a shooting guard. Baylor had signed three guards in that 2014 class, including him. No, it's two. For the 2015 class, Baylor already has two commitments from guards. You look at the current roster, they're loaded with guards. If anything, you know, maybe he turns out to be a great player. If he doesn't, then Baylor kind of got a favor by him not making grades, because I think it opens up a spot for a position of greater need, and that's, you know, forward or center. So, you know, if the coaches signed him, obviously they liked him and they wanted him in the program, but I think some guys can be expendable, and perhaps Eubanks was one of those guys.
He's going to go to what's called the LF8 Academy in Florida. And there's maybe an outside chance that if Baylor wants to pursue him and still stay with this and all that kind of stuff, it's kind of murky right now what that means for his letter of intent. I don't know if we have a true answer on that yet. So that's the first thing. If it is, and if he would be eligible to come to Waco in January, provided that Baylor feels the same way, then, yeah, I'm sure they could find a way to get him in January. We'll just kind of have to watch and see how this develops. I'm kind of with you, Jake, that if it doesn't turn out the way they hope it does and Eubanks winds up not coming here at all, I think they'll be able to be fine with it, because then I think it would make their – now, what I do think it would do is that you'd probably have some more spring 2015 activity than what we were thinking at this point, because we were probably going to have most of the work done in 2014 for the November signing period, but you might have some activity in lieu of what happened with Eubanks. You might have some activity with in the late signing period in April. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Baylor only has two seniors, Kenny Cherry and Royce O'Neal. And, you know, that's two openings. There's three commitments for the 2015 class. So it's not like there's space. This isn't football where you have 85 guys to sign.
Right.
A much smaller number with basketball. So I don't think they have to even fill this void, and it may be, you're right, like you said, open up one spot for the one extra spot for the 2015 class. You know, that pool of talent is dwindling because guys are committing elsewhere, and you've got the early signing period in November. But there will be guys left over, and Baylor, you know, like with Kenny Cherry and Pierre Jackson, they've shown that they can find some talent that's a little bit off the radar.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, Jake, what do we have coming up after the break?
We have a scintillating interview, and I mean that in the true sense of the word, actually. Paul Clark, he's the publisher of CycloneReport.com. It's the Rivals franchise for Iowa State. And he's been covering Iowa State for 13 years, so he obviously knows the team very well. I got to talk to him for about 10 minutes, so good question and answer with Paul Clark of CycloneReport.com.
Okay, and after the break, we will have the Cyclone Report interview with Jake Shaw, and we'll catch you on the flip side.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SickhamSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. This is Jay Shaw, your managing editor, and I'm joined right now by Paul Clark from the Cyclone Report. CycloneReport.com, that's the Iowa State franchise of Rivals.com. Paul, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Jake, my pleasure. Thanks for asking me on.
Good deal. Well, I know you've been doing this for quite a while. You know, tell me about how long have you been covering Iowa State?
Well, I actually started in the fall of 2002. So this is my 13th football season covering Iowa State and just over 12 years overall. So, yeah. It's been a fun run.
That's great. So you obviously have some perspective. I hate to bring up a sore subject right off the top, but you know, in 12, 13 years of watching Iowa State football, had you ever seen anything like last year's Iowa State at Baylor game?
Well, I had never seen Iowa State give up 70 points, but I had seen, hold on, I take that back. I had seen them give up 70 points back to the great Nebraska teams. Back in the 90s, I think I was even present for one of them in person. But, I mean, I had certainly seen Iowa State on the wrong end of some ugly scores before. Really, there kind of comes a tipping point where it doesn't really matter if it gets uglier. I mean, it's already ugly. Once you're down 40 or once you're down 50, I don't know where that tipping point is. It doesn't really matter how much uglier it gets because at that point it's just brutal. So, no, it's tough to watch and it's tough to sit through those kinds of games. And, you just kind of have to, as a fan anyway, or at least an interested observer, you kind of just have to wad those up in a ball and throw them away and try to forget them.
Yeah, that's my next question. I know Paul Rose was asked at his press conference, you know, how many points does he need to score on Saturday? Obviously, the media is going to focus on it because it was an unusual score. But how much do you think the team is talking about it, you know, when they're not dealing with the media, perhaps internally in the locker room? Do you think it's a subject at all? Do they try to forget it? Are they using it as motivation?
Well, Coach Rose was asked about that earlier this week, and he basically said, hey, look, the guys, everybody that was on the team last year remembers what happened down there. He said, we as a coaching staff, we're not going to really play it up a lot because we don't really feel we need to. Anytime you lose to somebody, you want to get them the next time. And I think when that loss is especially lopsided, you know, the motivation becomes greater. So I think it's something that's probably being talked about at Iowa State, but I don't think it's something that they're really dwelling on in terms of a revenge factor.
Sure. And a question Art Briles was asked, if Iowa State has a reputation of being just a very difficult place on opposing teams. And I was kind of surprised by his remark, and he basically said, well, that's just the way it is in the Big 12. You've obviously covered Iowa State away from Ames. Where do you think the home field advantage for Iowa State ranks in the Big 12? You know, I feel it's close to the top, if not at the top, but curious what your take is.
Well, I think it's, I don't know, it's tough because it's, I've been through many ups and downs of Iowa State football, you know, following it, not only work, but just on a personal level before that. I think right now, the atmosphere at Iowa State and the quote unquote difficulty level for teams coming in is about as high as it's been. And so I don't know where it would rank. I don't think it's not going to produce the sheer volume of noise maybe as some bigger places, but the fan base right now is, it's kind of, even though Iowa State has struggled a little bit the last year and change, it's still kind of the in thing to do. The younger, young professional age bracket from Des Moines that didn't really have a loyalty to Iowa State or Iowa, they've sort of adopted Iowa State now, and that's where a big part of it's coming from. But I don't know, in terms of ranking it, I think when it gets going, it can be as tough as any place in the conference, but on a consistent basis, I don't know, I'd probably put it somewhere in the middle.
Good deal. Well, I'm going to ask you now some questions about the actual team. Off to a 1-2 start, could easily be 2-1, possibly 0-3 too, but you know, you coming off a bye week before that, a great win, come back at I guess I would say your biggest rival, I'd assume. So after three games and a week off to think about it, what area or areas of the team have surprised you in a good way so far?
Well, I think the positive has been, the ramp up. I mean, from being as bad as Iowa State was on the first Saturday to where they were when they played Iowa in their third game, just the fact that the team has really grown a lot. I mean, if we're talking about specific position groups, I don't know. I think it's hard to say anybody's been just surprisingly outstanding based on what we thought they would be and felt they should be going into the season. So I don't know that I could identify a position group or a certain aspect of the team that's been super. But I think just how much progress they've made from you know, really getting humbled their first day out to putting a pretty good scare into Kansas mm-hmm. State to going on the road and winning at Iowa, I would just say the ramp up from 1-3 hopefully it just shows that Iowa State is a lot better than that team we saw the very first Saturday. And it's still a team that can hopefully play itself into the bowl conversation by the time the 1st of November rolls around.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody has forgiven, not forgiven, but just understood that loss in the opening week you're referring to, North Dakota State, is a very good FCS team, beat Kansas State the year before. I think they have a pretty good streak against FBS teams, so absolutely no shame in that, but still not, I guess, the second half, not the performance you wanted to see. Conversely, any area where you feel like the team maybe hasn't met the expectations, maybe a little underperforming right now?
Well, I think that the running game has been a disappointment. They've got an experienced offensive line for the most part, and they've got experience in the backfield. And the running game just really hasn't been very good for Iowa State yet. I think that's an area that we felt would be stronger, observers felt coming into the season. Defensively, I think the pass defense probably has been a little bit of a disappointment. It got better against Iowa, but the thing is, all three of the teams that Iowa State has played so far have been fairly traditional, establish the run, then pass type teams, and so they're not really the same types of teams that Iowa State's going to face week in and week out in the Big 12. So we don't yet know what Iowa State's going to look like against spread offenses. But the pass defense certainly has improved, and it was at its best against Iowa. But I still have some serious doubts of whether or not it's good enough against the high-powered, high-octane offenses like Baylor's that Iowa State's going to see here for the next several weeks.
Sure. Who are a few players that perhaps Baylor fans should know or guys they will know by the end of the game because, you know, they've just stood out on the field?
Well, I mean, on offense, of course, you start with the quarterback is Sam Richardson. He's a junior. He's been throwing for a very high percentage that he still needs to prove he can do is throw vertically. Iowa State's been doing a ton of short passing, which is great for the average, and that's an extension of the running game, of course. Mm-hmm. But we still need to see a little bit more vertically. Aaron Wimberly and Devondrick Neely, they split the running back duties. E.J. Bibbs, the tight end for Iowa State, is an all-Big 12 caliber type tight end. And the Cyclones also have a true freshman wide receiver named Alan Lazard, who's a good one that Baylor fans will want to keep an eye on. Defensively, Corey Morrissey, senior defensive end, outstanding player, a bona fide Big 12 defensive end, a guy that certainly has a chance at all conference honors. Nigel Tribune, sophomore, one of the corners, is quite good. And then in the secondary, TJ Mutcherson, sophomore safety, is another guy to keep an eye on. So those are the guys on offense and defense certainly that come to mind first.
Yeah, I did see some press about the secondary, how there were some questions going in. And I know you said Iowa State hasn't played a whole lot of spread teams, but so far what they've been asked to do, the secondary has looked pretty good, for some, you know, young and experienced guys. And read good things about Tribune as well, how he's would you say he's a, you know, potential all Big 12 kind of player?
I think eventually. I don't know if he's going to be there this year, but, you know, he was a true freshman just last year, and he was one of those guys that they didn't play him early in the season, but he was too good in practice to keep off the field, and eventually they decided to pull the red shirt and play him last year. So he's certainly Iowa State's best corner right now. They're on the other side. They use a couple of guys. They sort of have co-starters on the other side, and they certainly haven't been at the same level as Tribune, of course, but he's a guy that I think by the time he's done, by the time he's a senior, he's certainly going to be an all-conference caliber player.
And final question, I'm not going to ask you for a prediction, but I'm just curious if you have any gut feeling, maybe not how the game will play out, but how you think Iowa State's going to play, just having seen them up close, you know, all 3 weeks and then over the bye week, any kind of gut feeling about, you know, how the game will unfold on Saturday night?
Well, I know what Iowa State wants to do, of course. That's control the football and shorten the game and don't leave any points on the table. I mean, you may not even get enough scoring opportunities to keep up with Baylor, but you have to take advantage of every single scoring opportunity that you get, and you have to take full advantage of it. If you get first and goal at the 5, nothing but a touchdown will do. A field goal is not good enough in that situation. Certainly coming away with no points. So Iowa State can't leave any points on the table. They have to cash in every single scoring opportunity they have and do it to the fullest. And again, maybe be able to control the football, be able to milk the clock a little bit and shorten the game. And certainly they're going to want to try to come out ahead on the turnover battle. So I think it's a game where Iowa State wants it to certainly be more of a slower pace. They don't want to get in a track meet with Baylor, by any stretch.
Well, what you described, and I know it's different teams, but that's exactly what happened in 2012. Baylor its defense couldn't get off the field. Its offense had a hard time getting on the field, and when it did, they had turnovers. So I know Iowa State wants to see a similar thing unfold on Saturday night. Hey, Paul, really appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this. And, again, appreciate your time. And all our listeners, I hope you'll go to iowastate.rivals.com. That's the Cyclone Report. Thanks again, Paul.
Thanks, Jake.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Okay, and we are back, and now we are going to take a quick trip around the world of college football. And let's start out with the national games that we're going to talk about. Our first one is Arkansas versus Texas A&M, and this is an old Southwest Conference matchup. Kevin, thoughts and predictions?
I'm going to go A&M on this, but I think it's going to be really close. I really like the way Arkansas has been very physical with its running game the last 2 weeks. I do think that the one thing I can say about A&M is that while Kenny Hill is probably going to have a great career, he's still going to have to be a little bit more efficient with the mid-range balls, the deep balls. I mean, he was a little bit suspect last week against SMU. If you noticed, a lot of his yards were picked up because he had some quick hitch routes that guys just made great plays on or made 5 yards. 45 yards or something like that. So Kenny's going to have to be a little bit more vertical with the passing game. I just don't think that Arkansas can get enough passing plays from its quarterback, Nate Allen, in order to stay in this. The great test will be Arkansas secondary, which was horrible last year, but played pretty well at Tech a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
If they stand toe to toe with A&M's wide receivers core with the likes of Ricky Seals Jones, I'll give them a shot, and that's why I think this game will be close. But I still think the Aggies win.
Yeah, I'm going to pick A&M too. I also agree that it'll be close. I don't think Texas A&M has a good defense, but it's got to be better than what Texas Tech has. So I think Arkansas will have some success running it, but not nearly as much as they had against Texas Tech. So, and I also agree with Kenny Hill. I watched some of the SMU game, and I watched some of them against Rice. And I think he set the bar so high in his first game against South Carolina that he's having a hard time matching that effort. But I also think he was really fired up to play South Carolina, and I think you'll see that same amount of emotion and enthusiasm against Arkansas, another SEC team. So maybe he'll play a little better, but I think it's going to be very close. A&M, you know, maybe by a touchdown, 10 points.
I'm going to have to take A&M just off of program history, and I know that as a advanced professional journalist, I'm not supposed to have personal feelings towards teams, but I'm not a huge fan of A&M. I know it's hard to figure.
You're at the right place, Stephen.
But I don't think that Arkansas quite has the horses yet to go toe-to-toe with them. Yeah, they rushed like crazy on Tech, but we had big concerns about Tech's defense. Now, I don't think A&M's got a great defense, but I do think that they're going to slow the pigs down more than Texas Tech did. And so that's all I've got to say about that as far as comes to this. Okay, now next we have Missouri at South Carolina. And these are two teams that it's in the SEC, and so we know that they're going to be ranked. It doesn't matter what you do. If you're in the SEC, you are going to be ranked. Mm-hmm. But both of these teams have had early season losses that were surprising losses that people didn't expect. So, Jake, let's start with you this time. What do you think?
I'm going to pick a road upset. I'm going to pick Missouri. I think Indiana, who they lost to last week, is a poor man's 2011 Baylor, in that they have a very good offense and a terrible defense, and I think Missouri maybe struggled with that offense. I don't think South Carolina has such a good offense, and I think Missouri is kind of that classic rebound game. No one's, people are going to count them out, so I'm going to pick Missouri to upset South Carolina, and maybe South Carolina won't be ranked anymore, although, like you said, Stephen, I doubt it, because it's the SEC.
Dylan Thompson for South Carolina has had a pretty good start, even though he had a little bit of a ragged performance against A&M to start. But, it's obviously going to come down to South Carolina's defense, which has been so up and down this year. I do think the win against Georgia by the Gamecocks really kind of saved their season, if you will, kind of gave them some confidence. And I know that we've talked about, Jake, we talked about Missouri, Central Florida, and Missouri wound up blowing that game out in the latter stages of the fourth quarter. I don't know. There's something about Missouri that I still, after watching that game, I'm thinking, okay, they're going to be solid, they're going to be a bowl team, but, and I think the but is I just don't think they can win, they're going to be able to win quality games on the road, so I'm going with the Gamecocks here.
Okay. I don't have a feel too much about this one way or the other. I'm not sold on either team. I don't think either team's awful. I'm going to grab South Carolina just because they're at home. Okay, and then we have UCLA at Arizona State, and that's on Thursday night, so get your picks in early. What are y'all thinking on this? We got, I think UCLA's like 11 and ASU is like 15. So this is a top 25 matchup, and they're both Pac-12, so it does count towards conference standings.
And they both may not have their quarterbacks playing either.
Well, I think Brett Hundley's going to play for UCLA. They're making it sound like that, whereas Arizona State starter is definitely out.
Yeah, Kelly, right, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a broken foot, so Yeah. I'm going to take UCLA. I think they're the worst top 15 team out of the top 15 teams right now. I think they're the worst one out of that group. I have not been impressed watching them, but I think they're good enough to win at Arizona State, which is missing a pretty good quarterback.
I'll go with the Bruins. Very close. I mean, Neuheisel's son did a nice job pulling that game out in Arlington against Texas a couple weeks back. If Hundley plays, which apparently Jim Morris says that he was going to wait as long as he can, maybe up until the opening kickoff, to see if he's going to play. But even so, I'd really like to see if Arizona State can do this, but
that's
That's
gamesmanship, Kevin.
Oh yeah, I know. I'm just going. But as the reporter, I'm just taking him at his word, and I'm just that's what he's saying, you know, and kind of throwing it back at him a little bit. But I will go with the Bruins in a tight game.
I'm going to go with Arizona State, just simply because if Hundley's a game time decision, that's going to mean he's not 100%. I'm not. UCLA had a very tough time with Texas, and I don't think that a top, I think ranked 5 at the start of the season. I don't think a top team should have that much trouble with the Longhorns team that is in such a rebuilding mode right now.
Well, they had a tough time with Memphis and Virginia too. That's what I'm saying. They're definitely overrated right now, but it doesn't mean they're bad, right? I just think they're overrated. Anyway, Sorry to jump in there, Stephen.
That's okay. All right, and then we move to the Big 12, and we have Oklahoma and West Virginia are taking the week off after their slugfest, and that was a pretty good game. And that, you know, West Virginia really has put everybody on notice. They've got two losses, but both of their losses were to top five teams. So those guys are doing some impressive things right now. And Oklahoma this looks kind of like a vintage Oklahoma team, that they go in and take care of business and they win the games they should win, which you can't always say about Oklahoma. All right, but as far as the games, Thursday night, we have Texas Tech at Oklahoma State. Kevin, start us.
I'll go with Oklahoma State. Dax Garman has looked pretty good coming in at quarterback, and even though Mike Gundy is not real happy with his running game, the way it's at or the way it's performed in the first three games, he won't say it. But Cliff Kingsbury will say, he'll probably say he's got to be licking his chops against that Tech rushing defense and say we can finally get ourselves well here. And heck, on the Big 12 coaches conference call, Kingsbury said, well, heck, if I was Gundy, I'd look at that film and see what I could do to attack it too. It makes sense. The one thing that's really going wrong for Tech right now, the defense notwithstanding and their defensive coordinator change notwithstanding, Davis Webb has not played well. He has not looked good in each of these first three games. I think he's been extremely average. The defense, now we can talk about them as having some real issues here. You know, the other problem with the Tech team besides Davis Webb is I just do not see a wide receiver in that group that's going to be a difference maker. You know, Jake, when I was voting for the Big 12 preseason all-conference team, I looked at Tech's wide receivers group and I said, who is the guy who could emerge as the guy? And the only one I could think of was Jakeem Grant when I looked at that roster.
Yeah, I agree.
And that was the only guy. I mean, look, they've got some kids that are pretty interesting, but nothing that can make an impact like what Katie Cannon or Davion Hall does. I mean, guys that you know that could be playmakers. And that could be, you know, and I think Oklahoma State, I know the Tech's going to play their butts off and they're going to play as hard as they can, but I just think Oklahoma State's going to win this.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Oklahoma State too, and I agree with everything you said. I mean, look, nobody expected Texas Tech to play like Alabama on defense, but the fact that they're struggling on offense is a bit of a surprise and probably a bigger concern than the defense. You knew the defense was going to be bad. If the offense isn't playing well, what do you have in Lubbock? And I agree with the receivers. I think they've got some good players, but they don't have any game breakers. And I think Oklahoma State, I think they're just going to have a field day on offense, and I think Tech's going to put up some points, but it's going to be a classic Big 12 shootout, but I think Oklahoma State will end up winning because, Stephen, we talked before the podcast, Boone-Pickens Stadium might be the toughest venue, road venue for opposing teams, so it's going to victimize Texas Tech.
Yeah, I'm going to go with OSU. It's no secret that I've had concerns with the coaching at Texas Tech. They're going on, I think, their seventh offensive coordinator in the last 7 years, or defensive coordinator in the last 7 years. And I just think that, I'm not that crazy about what's going on at Tech right now. And also, I think you have to look back that, they started out really hot last year, but now this year, if you look, I think that if you want to look at where a team's going, you don't really look at the last whole season. You look at the last five games. You look at their last five games. If you take a look, Tech had a good bowl victory, but their record extending back into last season, they bottomed out at the end of last season, and their only victories other than that good bowl game have been against teams that they should have handled, that it would have been a huge problem if they'd lost to. So, yeah, I think that's I'm Oklahoma State and the whole Boone-Pickens Stadium, the people slapping the walls. that's a tough place to play. Then we have the Battle of the Metroplex, and that is TCU at SMU. And Kevin, June Jones has bailed from SMU, and what do they have left?
They don't have a lot. That team's pretty bad. What have they scored? Only 12 points this year. I expect TCU to come in there and just flat steamroll SMU, something to the tune of like maybe 47-9, if it's that.
I think they're 4-9.
Yeah, that would be an increase for SMU, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And SMU's on its what did I hear, guys? That they're on their third different starting quarterback in four games. They have a walk on by the name of Kirsch or whatever his name is, who's going to start for them against TCU. This just spells absolute blowout over at Ford Stadium in Dallas. And of course, I don't even know if SMU really cares about the season because no one on that coaching staff is going to be back next year anyway, and so everyone's just kind of looking forward to the coaching search and what happens in December. I think for SMU, it's kind of like this is all about December, and TCU is this is all about getting to 3-0 so we can make sure that we're halfway to a bowl eligibility and kind of go from there. And like I said, I think TCU's defense is pretty good anyway, and this game will not be a fair display of what their defense is capable of, but I do think TCU's defense is pretty good.
Yeah, I think this will be SMU's worst loss of the season. Maybe not as bad as the A&M, but I think it's going to be pretty bad. Like you said, walk-on starter quarterback. TCU loves to beat their rival, so it's going to be ugly. There aren't many teams worse than SMU in the country right now, and it's just a pretty shocking drop-off from where they were just 2 years ago and what June Jones had built. Kind of sad to see just how a program can just drop like that, but it's happened. And I've said it before to SMU fans. I happen to know a few. The hard work's been done. June Jones brought him out of the abyss, so they're in much better shape now because of him. Even though his last couple years were very forgettable.
Yeah, I think from what it sounds like over there, they completely torpedoed the roster with a bunch of guys who probably shouldn't have Division I scholarships, and we saw that in the opener against Baylor. We made the comment that maybe 5-6 guys on that SMU roster would be considered to be members of Baylor's roster, so that just kind of showed, and it showed itself to be in that game too.
Yeah, I'm going to go with TCU for a fairly easy win. One of the things about TCU is that they, if they're playing a bad team, they're pretty good about, they don't play down to the level of their competition. They go ahead and play a solid game and get it, and get it put away. And I think that you're seeing that what happened with SMU, I think that what you're seeing is they're playing this really tough non-con schedule, and that's because the conference that they're in is not going to get a lot of respect. So they were expecting to be able to compete at a much higher level, and it just hasn't happened. And I think TCU rolls pretty easily. Next, we have UTEP at Kansas State. And so what do we think that the Purple Wizards are going to be able to do with the University of Texas at El Paso? Jake?
I think Kansas State will rebound from a tough loss to Auburn, a game that they really feel like they should have won. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but they definitely had their chances. Just curious because, you know, UTEP has played Texas Tech, so it's kind of interesting when you see Big 12 teams share a non-conference opponent. So just curious how that will go. UTEP's got a really outstanding running back named Aaron Jones. Nobody's going to talk about him, but, I mean, he's really one of the better runners in the nation. So, you know, that's another thing to watch is how much success does he have against Kansas State's defense.
I think Kansas State, too, but I think it'll be a little bit tight. I think UTEP's, they've got a little moxie in them. I kind of like the way that they played. I like their grit against Tech. They probably could have won that game if not for some, you know, some mismanagement in the fourth quarter. But I do agree with you. I think Aaron Jones is a really good player. I think what Kansas State would like to establish in this game is to get Tyler Lockett going because he's really had a slow start to his season. He only has 13 receptions, guys, and that's just
14.
Not 14.
No, he should have 14.
Yeah.
He dropped the touchdown against Auburn.
Exactly, so. Yeah. The one that was tipped in the end zone that went right through his hands and went for the pick in the end zone.
That's what I'm saying. That's maybe they should have won, but yeah, that was on him.
Yeah, he's just not played very well. You know, Bill Snyder can sugarcoat it and say, well, you know, that gives you different options. Yeah, but you know, the game is you've got to have your best players be their best players, and Tyler Lockett has not had a great start. And he needs to get going, and they've got to find out. And he and Jake Waters have got to get going together, or else if they don't, then that offense could look pretty pedestrian because they have not really established a running game. Guys, last week they had, and some of these sacks are thrown into this, but they had 30 carries for 40 yards last week against Auburn. I don't care who that is, you're not going to win very many games with rushing yardage like that.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, I'm going with Kansas State. Not going to predict a spread, but I think Kansas State wins. The biggest surprise to me with Kansas State last week was that normally, you know, the one thing you can count on with Kansas State is they don't beat themselves. Usually they're a very solid team. I'll tell you something, I wouldn't want to have been I'm not going hunting with Kansas State's place kicker because standing beside him is not a good place to be. They had the missed field goals that came back to haunt them. They had, the drop passes, and that was very un-Kansas State-y. But I still think that they rolled. They've just got way too much for UTEP. Now, in our next game, this is going to be, I believe, the first time in history that a Kansas team with a winning record will be hosting a University of Texas team with a losing record. Okay, so Texas at Kansas. Predictions. Jake, start us out this time.
Oh, man, I'm going to pick Texas just because, you know, we talk about the talent issue or the talent gaps of teams, and Texas is definitely more talented than Kansas. And I think they'll end up winning by 14 or more, but, this type of Kansas team is a team that Texas should beat by, you know, 4 touchdowns, and they might not do it, and that says all you need to know about Texas right now.
Jake, or Kevin.
That's me.
I'm calling the upset. I'm going out on a limb. I'm going for the fighting Charlie Weisses. And I have no idea why.
Neither do I.
I might be out of complete. Well, everyone has said I'm out of my mind, so that's a given. But you know, I guess the reason why is because even with their two running backs, with Malcolm Brown and Jonathan Gray, that offense just those guys are not running the ball great, and the offensive line still is not moving, pushing people off the ball. I know they face quality opponents better than Kansas and BYU. And also UCLA. I get that. I don't know. I mean, if you're Kansas, though, and you've got a bunch of kids from Texas on that Kansas roster who probably weren't even looked at by UT, They know that UT is down. If you got a shot, this is probably going to be KU's best shot in many, many years to pick off Texas. They should have beaten them a couple of years ago if not for a Texas touchdown. What was it, inside the final seconds or whatever it was, in order to pull out, I think, the last visit to Lawrence, if memory serves. And with Tyrone Swoops, don't see him as a really big playmaker. He's kind of a game manager, and I think that Montel Cozart has the game of his life, and Kansas pulls it out.
I think Texas is going to win. I think this may be one of the ugliest games you see all season. because Kevin, you nailed it on the issues that Texas has on offense. What does Kansas have on offense?
They got two decent running backs, but again, they've got the same problems that Texas have. They have a quarterback playmaker problem, and their running game is okay, but can it carry the day?
Yeah, and so, I mean, you got two guys who really aren't great passers, and I think it's going to look kind of like a 1960s game because I do think it's going to be a short game because I don't think you're going to see a whole bunch of hurry-up offense on this.
That might help the people watching it to get out of there faster.
Yeah, and, it's not going to be. However, I do think that you're going to have to – I think that you're going to see some changes coming up in the near future. I'm curious as to what's going to happen with Charlie Weiss at Kansas because I think that they went for a known name when they hired Charlie Weiss, and I think they're kind of starting to regret that now. Okay, and we also have the game that we have talked about on this podcast, Baylor at Iowa State. Okay, and Jake, go ahead and start out.
I'm going to go with a very risky score of Baylor 52-30, and the reason it's risky is it assumes Baylor kicks a field goal and makes it. So, no, just kidding. Chris Callahan, the kicker. But, I think Iowa State will score some points more than Baylor obviously allowed last year and more than what they're allowing per game this year just because, you know, they're at home, tough place to play, all that. You know, we've gone over that. But I think Baylor is very capable of scoring 50 to 60 points there because I think the offense is that good, and I for some reason, maybe it's the bye week, just getting the healthy guys back, I think we're going to see an excellent Baylor offense on Saturday night. I don't know if it's a gut feeling or just based on what information we have, but, if Baylor's on fire offensively, they'll score more than 52. But I got Baylor 52-20.
Yeah, I predicted Baylor 44-19, and I'm probably going to regret that. But at the same time, I think that they'll still win the game pretty comfortably. I think Iowa State will try to shorten the game by squeezing the football as much as it can, and if they can convert some third downs and keep Baylor's offense off the field, because you've really got two defenses here. You've got Iowa State's defense, and then you've got Iowa State's offense that's going to at least try and secure it. They've got to establish a running game. What I really want to see here is the Baylor defensive line. First time that we're going to see them play in a different type of setting than we've seen in the first grade. And so as much as I've praise them, talk them up, whatever, because I'm really intrigued at how that group's going to look. Again, Baylor 44-19 could be worse, but that's what I'm going with right now.
And by the way, we do these picks and write them down and don't share them with each other before we start. I picked Baylor 45, Iowa State 14. As I said, I think that Iowa State's going to come out just hiring a cat. I think that they're going to try to start really well. But I think that Baylor is going to play pretty steady. One of the things that, you know, we've talked about previously, Jake, you kind of talked about how Briles hasn't. What you see as this time goes on is that as Briles builds this team, he starts trying to do different things. And I think this year is kind of the year he was targeting as the big deal year. I think last year surprised even him a little bit at how fast Baylor came out. But I think that Baylor pops it 45 to 14. And so that wraps up that for us. And any last thoughts, guys?
No, it should be an interesting weekend. It'll be nice to get the Big 12 conference season going and see, you know, how good this Baylor team can get as it makes a push toward a Big 12 championship and a potential berth in the Final Four. A lot of fun. Should be a fun next 2 months.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't have any more thoughts, Stephen, because we're almost at 2 hours now, and I can't think longer than 2 hour stretches. But yeah, I'm excited for a step up in schedule. I'm looking forward to seeing just what this Baylor team is made of. If it's better than last year or the same, whatever, we're going to find out pretty soon.
Okay, and I've already said more than I know, so I'm going to wrap it up, and we will catch you next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.
The Sikkim Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Rivals or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.